The following audio file was recorded on April 8th in Nashville, Tennessee by Earnhardt Productions Incorporated at a voting rights and election reform conference titled Gathering to Save Our Democracy. It has been uploaded to this site courtesy of the January 30th Coalition, an Ohio-based voting rights group which endorsed the conference. You are welcome to copy and distribute or broadcast this recording. Please also consider making a donation to Radio for All so that recordings like this one can continue to be made available.
My name is Bernie Ellis. I'm the organizer of a Tennessee grassroots group gathering to save our democracy. We decided, because of the historic nature of this conference, to give both our local media and the videographers who have traveled from around the country a chance to ask questions of some of our speakers, and I'm very pleased to see, I think, at least 8 or 9 of our speakers who were here early. I'd like to just say a few introductory remarks, and then I'm going to ask each of the speakers in turn to step up and say just a couple of minutes about why they're here and what they're prepared to discuss. And so, again, those of you who are covering the conference, once we give everyone a chance to say their minute or two about why they're here, we'll then essentially convene the speakers up front or whatever is convenient for you folks to follow up with questions. And we may be joined by others as we move forward, but we are very pleased that at last count we will have, I think, 6 videography teams filming this conference, and I see, I guess, 3 of them are set up now. As of yesterday, we'll have representatives traveling to Nashville from 26 states. This conference is now supported by almost 60 local, state, and national election reform organizations, and I'm very proud to say that we've added 6 labor unions to that group of 60. So we're very pleased by the broad-based nature of our support for this conference. Our organization, Gathering to Save Our Democracy, is only about 4 months old. And like a number of groups, we coalesced after the November 2nd election and began educating ourselves about the evidence for a tampered with election and what we need to do to prevent it from ever happening again. We threw the idea out about 2 months ago that a national meeting of this sort would be useful for a variety of reasons. Once we made the decision to put our dream out to the election reform community nationally, they have not allowed us to set the idea aside. So we are honored and humbled that the nation and those people very concerned about the franchise are choosing to join us here in Nashville for the next several days. Our conference has 4 primary goals let you know what motivated us. We believed it was very important to provide a venue to allow the election reform community to meet in one place. I think we've already achieved that goal based on our pre-registration. We thought it was critical, particularly in the continued atmosphere of dismissiveness about our concerns, to update the activist community and the media and the grassroots communities from these 26 states on what we are continuing to learn about problems with the 2004 election. So again, I think by tomorrow afternoon at 6, we will all have been updated as to the status of continuing investigations of election fraud in perhaps as many as a dozen states, and equally importantly, what we are working toward in terms of achieving election reform and election justice in the country. So that's our second goal. Our third goal, which is in part what we're trying to achieve here this morning and throughout the conference, is to give both the mainstream and the alternative media another opportunity to refresh this story. And again, we're very pleased to have the paper of record of the state on the front row. I had an opportunity before we started this event to be interviewed by the largest television station in Nashville that's going to be promoting the conference starting at noon and at all their newscasts up through this evening. They also say they will be back to cover. At the same time, of course, the place where this story has continued to have legs is the alternative media or the alternate media. We're very well represented both in the audience and among our speakers to have prominent voices in the emerging mainstream media, which is now still called the alternate media, I guess, or alternative media. Our fourth goal is probably the most difficult. And the more I've thought about it, and the more my phone has rung as we've set up this conference, the more I believe that all we can do at this conference is begin a process and not complete a process of coalescing our energies and our priorities into a workable blueprint for election reform and election justice. We are, if nothing else, an energetic lot. But what we also need to be is a better coordinated and collaborative lot. And I do hope that this conference will move us in that direction also, to have us as a community of Americans deeply concerned about the future of the country, to begin to work together in a more coordinated fashion. To that end, we are very pleased that Common Cause has joined us. Their national election reform chairman is on the program tomorrow. We've added people for the American Way Foundation and other groups that have had a serious interest in free, fair, and verifiable elections for a while. Without further ado, perhaps the easiest way to do this, rather than calling on people, the speakers, for the most part, know who they are. And so what I'd like to do is perhaps start, Teresa, with you. And for those of you on this side of the sanctuary, if you would just speak one after another. And then Bernie will start with you and do the same on this side. So my suggestion would be just preface what you plan to discuss in your part of the program. And once everyone has a chance to say a minute or two on why you're here, and Judy, I will time you. Judy Alter and I have been having fun on just exactly how hard-nosed we're going to be on the timing of the speeches here. But again, after everyone has a chance to say something, if grassroots groups are nothing else, we are somewhat informal and able to adjust our circumstances. So whatever would be easiest then for media who are here to follow up with your questions, we'll accommodate. So again, Teresa, let's just start with you. And if you would, for purposes of our videographers, it would be best to come up to the mic. Before we get started, I want to tell everyone that among the videography teams here, Earnhardt and Company has really been part of our planning process. They are a Nashville-based firm that will be filming the entirety of the plenary sessions and making available to our organization both the audio and video that, at least the audio, we should be able to have posted on the internet in short order. We've got several election reform sites that have asked to be able to web stream the audio from the program. So for those of you who are speakers and participants, if you are approached by a videographer or a member of the media, please give them all the time that they ask of you. And Earnhardt and Company does have some release forms to allow your comments and image to be used in their final piece. So be sure to sign that and cooperate fully. We, again, are pleased to finally be started with this conference. And there's no better place to be if you're concerned about democracy than Jefferson Street Missionary Baptist Church this weekend. We're not so haughty as to believe what was posted about this conference on the web a week ago, that this is the most important event in the country since May of 1776. We'd like to believe that's the case, but our attitude is this is a vital conference to correct the problems that we have with our voting process and to shine a heavy light on perpetrators of election fraud that, again, we've just experienced. So, Teresa, let's start with you, and then, again, we'll go down this row, and then Bernie, start with you and go down this row. And those of you who are speakers, again, one after another, come up and share.
I'm Teresa Hummel. My website is wheresthepaper.org. And I've been working full-time on election integrity issues for the last 2 years. A vital democracy requires an informed, engaged citizenry, and this conference is going to go a long ways to helping achieve that. Another requirement of democracy is that all election procedures be observed. It's shocking to me that there seems to be a controversy or conflict between citizens who want to observe and boards of elections that are trying to prevent people from observing. This is something that all people in a democracy should be working towards, and boards of elections should be demanding that observers from every party concerned with the ballot should be in there observing every procedure. The types of questions that have arisen about our last elections, and not just the 2004 election, but before that, the questions that have arisen that cannot be answered, was there fraud or not, are a result of people not observing the procedures, and it's incumbent on our boards of elections to demand observation so that this kind of question does not arise in the greatest democracy on earth.
I'm Judy Alter. I was part of Recount New Mexico, and I'm here with a master of New Mexico data. I got to study the internal memory, cartridge memory, absentee reports, and the early voting tapes of Santa Fe County. And I went vote by vote, number by number, and found remarkable problems that probably not only generalized to the entire New Mexico election, but to 17 states that have the straight party option. It's the first thing that comes up on the ballot, and it's not listed on the Secretary of State's websites for any count. So I had access to it, but we don't, and you'll hear my paper, what I've discovered. I'm calling it the vote diminishing trap. I'm also with Dan Ashby leading a total recount of California citizens, county by county, first to see and understand perhaps if and how Arnold was or was not elected, and then to challenge the funny numbers that came in with Carrie Boxer.
I am Charles Kimbrough, and I'm here to give some historical perspectives to the problems that we have had in getting it right as it relates to voter protection and voter participation in all aspects and of life. It is quite ironic that we'd be at Jefferson Street Baptist Church. For those of you who do not know, Jefferson Street Baptist Church is noted for being accommodating as it relates to spiritual guidance and involvement, taking action as it relates to affairs of people, period. I just happened to have thought it was in the year of 2000 that we left from this church to go to Miami to have some impact as relates to continue counting the vote. Of course, you know of our success at that. But there is quite a long road of adjustments that must be made, and I am honored and privileged to see that we have a quarterback here as relates to Bernie Ellis, and seeing that some direction is given for accountability. We look forward to seeing you later during the day.
Good morning. I'm Larry English. I'm president and principal consultant of Information Impact International from Brentwood, Tennessee. So I'm very excited to see this conference here. I'm actually surprised, however, that this didn't happen 4 years ago when these problems became so notably just exploded in our faces. I was absolutely shocked in the year 2000 presidential election. My focus and why I'm here, I apply quality management principles to information processes. The very same principles that Deming taught the Japanese, who applied it to manufacturing and transformed the economics of competing in manufacturing by eliminating the waste and the defects in manufacturing. When I read his 14 points of quality management, I realized that the very same principles needed to be applied to information. Since 1990, I've been applying those quality management principles to information. And our election processes are pure information. There's no tangible outcome except for the information and then the results that follow that. If a private company had the same degree of quality in their processes as we have had in our election processes, those companies would go out of business. In the 2000 presidential election, it wasn't the 300,000 disenfranchised voters in Florida. Across the country, Caltech, MIT discovered and analyzed that there were 4 to 6 million disqualified votes. That's the same number of people who voted in Florida that year. That's the degree of disenfranchisement we have had. Not even counting the potential fraud that we have had in the election processes that we see today, we must apply quality principles to error-proof those processes, to assure that voters have the ability to verify for whom they have cast their vote, and to assure that their votes have been counted properly. And what I will be leading with is I've been involved with, I was in Washington with the Ohio group when we petitioned the senators for participating in the objection process. I was on the Senate floor, or not on the, but in the gallery during the debate, and I saw some good words being said, and I saw some people denying reality. And I was involved in the January 30 Ohio meeting in Columbus, and conducted a facilitated focus group to conduct a root cause analysis for some of the processes and then identify process improvements. And I'll be speaking to some of those recommended improvements along with other things that we need to do to error-proof and put our processes in control, and especially with the temptation to bias the chain of custody, that we never have a situation that is subject to tampering. Our electronic voting machines have to be absolutely rigorously tested and verified with double storage in a way that you cannot tamper with one set of data without being able to identify that that has been tampered with. Thank you very much, and I look forward to the rest of the program and the conference and the outcomes. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Laura Schaefer. I'm the Director of Development for the Open Voting Consortium. We are a nonprofit organization dedicated to the development, maintenance, and delivery of open voting systems for use in public elections. We are comprised of computer scientists, voting experts, and voting rights activists. We have a growing membership base and have open voting meetup groups around the country. We are, right now, the current system of voting is 100% privatized. It is owned by corporations that control how the votes are counted, how the machines are programmed, and it is a completely privatized and closed process. This needs to be open and public. We need to have an open voting system. This means we need to have open public software for all voting machines, including the machines used that you vote on and the machines that are counting our votes. We also need to have standards and procedures for elections that are publicly known and monitored. And we need to have a voter-verified paper ballot that is printed after the voter makes their selections and is checked against the electronic record to prevent ballot box stuffing and electronic vote manipulation. Again, I'm working with the Open Voting Consortium on this, and we have three things that we are doing to get a system like this in place. We have open voting meetup groups around the country, and we're creating an election rules database where they will find out what the procedures are for the elections in their counties and make sure that those standards make sense and that they are being followed. We continue to work on legislation such as the SB 1438 bill that was passed in California that requires a paper trail by 2006. We'd like to see some stronger legislation that makes that paper trail count as the vote and requires open source software for voting machines and central tabulators that count the votes. And we're working on the software development, which again is going to be open source, free public software for use in the public elections.
Good morning, I'm Sharona Merrill. I'm co-founder of the National Ballot Integrity Project. Very happy to be here today, see you all. I just want to say that what's going on in our elections in America is a full frontal assault on democracy right under our noses. And it's making a mockery out of the democratic process and the American people, and it must be stopped. I want to say that I'm most concerned right now about the sleight of hand that is occurring in our elections. Smoke and mirrors and sleight of hand. I've been doing a good deal of research in that area. For instance, there is concern over the voter-verified paper audit trail approach to our elections. Why? Well, Rebecca Mercury, Dr. Rebecca Mercury, she's a Radcliffe Fellow and an expert technologist in the election equipment area, says this: any programmer can write code that displays one thing on a screen, records something else, and prints yet another result. And what does this mean? It means that a voter can vote and match the receipt that comes out of the machine to the vote, confirm, yes, indeed, this is their intent, walk away feeling completely reassured when something entirely different is being registered invisibly into the machine. Think about it. If we have elections that are run by
private, partisan vendors creating this equipment. We have mystery pre-programmers, mystery configurers and maintainers of these machines, which we have tracked to Diebold, for instance, whose CEO has vowed, as of last year, to deliver the electorate of the state of Ohio to the president in 2004. What's wrong with this picture? So another thing we're looking at, and by the way, the NBIP, the National Ballot Integrity Project, is a proponent of hand-counted paper ballots, citizen-observed vote counts. That's the way I feel we need to go. Simple is best. Complexity is a problem in itself, because when we work with complex systems, we need complex solutions that are actually problems in themselves. Now, another thing I just wanted to touch on briefly is we are discovering correlations between the promise software and the e-voting industry. For instance, the same business plan and formula, the same eager intelligence and defense industry participation, underwriting, and interest, the same thrust as regards aggressive export of hardware and software overseas, the same cast of characters, including Robert Gates, senior American intelligence and national security official and past director of the CIA, who was previously a chief purveyor of the promise software overseas, knowingly complete with back doors for spying on countries overseas, who is now heading up Vote Here, a mysterious electronic voting vendor, which we believe to be involved in the encryption technology. Now, one of the things I looked into personally was, what was this great interest on the part of the defense contractors in the Help America Vote Act? And the more I look into this, the more I see that we have some serious issues here, which may, in fact, involve wireless technology. Here's a quote from the originator of the Promise software, which was intended to be interagency software for use for tracking criminals by the Justice Department and other agencies. He says, "What we've been told is that not only the software was sold, but computers with extra chips. What the chips do, we've been told, the extra chips, is to broadcast the data inside Promise to satellites owned by the NSA. But we don't know enough about it, as they've not shared anything with us." You see, the software was modified. It's been used for all different applications since. And there may, in fact, be a correlation between the Promise software applications and the e-voting industry now. Point being, if we have such questions, should we be using this at all? Think about it. Well, that's all I have to say today. Thank you.
My name is Bernie Windham. I'm not representing any organization. I'm a data analyst. I'm a past, I'm a member of Common Cause and a past lobbyist for Common Cause. I basically was, monitoring. I've been also been a legislative analyst, and I follow the elections in Florida. I've been pretty carefully monitoring the elections in recent years in Florida. And what I've found is a lot of problems. There were hundreds of thousands of voters who were eligible voters or should have been eligible voters who were purged from the rolls or who filled out registration forms but were never processed and never got to vote. So for each of the last two presidential elections in Florida, there were hundreds of thousands of voters who either were purged from the rolls for no valid reason, for a reason such as their last name was the same as a felon, and that's not a very valid reason to purge somebody. There are other reasons, too, but in any case, they were not for good reasons. And in addition to that kind of thing, there's also an awful lot of partisanship in the whole electoral system and in the management of the elections that makes a big difference in terms of how the election goes and how the votes are counted and the whole thing. And there's all kind of manipulation of things like polling places, where in Florida we had an awful lot of problems with polling places in minority precincts having a lot of changes just before the election. and the voters in large numbers not knowing what the proper polling place was. And not only that, but not able to find out what the proper polling place was. And some went to four or five different precincts trying to find what their proper precinct was. And it's a trivial thing to know what the right precinct is. Any county should have a computerized system where you, in less than 5 seconds, can find out what's the proper precinct for a person. And yet we had hundreds of thousands of voters in Florida who could not know which was their proper precinct, which in my opinion is ridiculous. But we also had partisan things like systematic dirty tricks going on all over the state, whereby the, especially in the minority community, the voters were given, they were sent on letterhead that looked legitimate, a notification that their polling place had been changed. So this is part of the confusion of the polling place things. So we had you know, hundreds of thousands of people, flyers and letters and such, that looked like they're legitimate, telling voters that their polling place has changed. They also got calls, similar, same kind of thing, in many counties, in mostly in the minority precincts. They got calls and letters and all kinds of things telling them that their voting place had been changed and sending them to the wrong place. So we had hundreds of thousands of voters looking around trying to figure out where in the world is my polling place, and it's just totally uncalled for and ridiculous for that kind of thing to be occurring. And I'm like I said, I'm a data analyst, and what I've really done is that I compiled the election protection hotline information that was the call-in calls from voters on election day. And in Florida, we had about 5,000 people who called in reporting irregularities. And the same was true in some other states like Ohio and Pennsylvania and many other states. So there were you know, between 40 and 50,000 irregularities reported in that system. Common Calls also had a similar system that had even more. So there are, you know, many thousands of reports of irregularities that happen. And what I've done is gone through and systematically go through the database of the people who call in and look at what kind of problems that they were reporting. And what I found in Florida, and it's the same thing in other states, I mentioned the systematic dirty tricks that were trying to confuse the minority voters, but the same thing happened in other states. It happened in many counties of many other states, the same kinds of systematic dirty tricks. And it was also a part of the whole process whereby we had states that changed their laws or rules for elections and said that, well, if you're a voter and you vote in the wrong precinct, you lose your vote. You can only vote in your official precinct. But the voters couldn't find. The same kinds of things happen. There was illegal dirty tricks. There was information from poll workers that did not properly inform the voters what the proper precincts were. There was a systematic partisan effort to confuse the minority voting community and cause them to lose a lot of votes, and they did. Not only that, there were long lines because of shortages of machines. Again, the minority precincts tended to have fewer machines, and the ones they had didn't work very well. There was an awful lot of broken machines. So there were all these kinds of problems in Florida and also in many other states that were going on. And so anyway, I'm going to be talking about Florida and other states later on. But these are the kind of things that I looked at. I've compiled all this massive information from not just the election protection database, but also some other databases also, and looked at the kinds of problems that were reported, and I'll be documenting that. And I do have some handouts that have websites that have a lot more documentation on them.
I'm Dr. Richard Hayes Phillips. I'm an independent investigator and was the leading statistician investigating precinct results for the Moss versus Bush lawsuit that sought to overturn the results of the Ohio presidential election. I would like to summarize my findings as briefly as possible. There are still more than 92,000 uncounted regular ballots in Ohio, most of them punch cards, highly concentrated in precincts that voted overwhelmingly for John Kerry. Also, there are an estimated 35,000 provisional ballots yet uncounted. In Ohio, by law, the order in which the candidates' names must appear on the ballot must rotate from precinct to precinct. In Cleveland especially, at polling stations where multiple precincts vote in the same place, voters who brought their punch cards to the wrong machines intended for a different precinct had their votes shift from one candidate's column to another, which cost Kerry an estimated 20,000 votes. In Columbus, discriminatory allocation of voting machines, where 122 machines were withheld from inner city precincts, cost Kerry an estimated 17,000 votes. In Toledo, systematic voter suppression activities led directly to lower vote counts in Democratic precincts. Tactics included removal of longtime residents from the voter rolls, broken voting machines, running out of ballots, sending voters to the wrong lines or to the wrong polling locations. In three southwestern Ohio counties that provided to Bush his entire statewide margin of victory, John Kerry received fewer votes than Ellen Connolly, an underfunded African-American municipal judge from Cleveland. In Miami County, after 100% of the precincts had reported on election night, another 19,000 votes appeared in the vote tallies, which gave Bush an additional 6,000 vote margin. The reported voter turnout in one precinct in Miami County of 98.55% has already been disproven by a voter canvass. In Mahoning County, 20 to 30 touchscreen voting machines recorded votes for candidates opposed to those selected by the voters. In one Youngstown precinct, some voters reported that their votes hopped from Kerry to Bush. Others said that the presidential option never appeared on the screen, yet no undervotes were recorded in this precinct. I know of no other way this could have happened besides those voting machines having been programmed to default to candidate Bush. We also have sworn affidavits from voters who were given punch cards in Cuyahoga County with the hole for Bush already punched out of them. If they voted for Bush, they would cast a valid ballot. If they voted for Kerry, they would be casting an overvote and would spoil their ballots. I want to know why we don't get to look at the much vaunted paper trail. The electronic count stands. We were not allowed to discover any evidence or to depose any witnesses. And sanctions have even been threatened against our attorneys for having the temerity to challenge the results. To me, the pattern is clear and compelling. Almost all the irregularities and voter suppression activities are in one direction, hurting John Kerry and helping George Bush. This is no accident. This is election fraud, and I'm not doing this because of John Kerry. I think the winner should win, the loser should lose, and the people should rule.
Good morning. I just want to first thank all the speakers for coming here and thank Bernie Ellis for organizing this event. And for those of us like me that believe in God, I think it's very appropriate that this should start in a church because I think democracy is something that is very spiritual and that we all should support, of course. Sorry. Okay, my name is Kathy Dopp, and I'm the founder of U.S. Count Votes, and earlier last summer I founded Utah Count Votes. And so I worked in Utah to prevent the adoption of DRE voting machines because 95% of computer scientists are against DRE voting machines, the electronic voting machines that are inauditable. And if 95% of engineers told you that a bridge would fall down, would you drive over that bridge? But yet 95% of computer scientists are telling us not to use inauditable electronic voting equipment, and yet for some reason states keep purchasing those types of voting equipment. My group is formed of a group of mostly PhD statisticians and mathematicians, and we're nonpartisan, and we have Republicans in our group as well as Democrats, and our goal is to form the first ever nationwide voter fraud and error detection database that contains precinct level, vote type level, election results, voter registration information, demographic data, and voting machine type information. And from this database that we gather, we're going to develop precinct level, we're going to be able to automatically detect precinct level errors in vote counting after elections. Anything that has statistical significance, we will be able to detect. And from that data, we will be able to produce statistically court-worthy evidence of fraud or errors in vote counting systems that might otherwise go unnoticed or unreported. And so far, we've designed the database. We've designed a database system that will work for every state in America, and that wasn't trivial, but that's what we've been working on since November. And we've got a high-speed database server on the internet, and we have collected a group of about 50 volunteer PhD statisticians. We're soliciting and collecting groups of volunteer lawyers and volunteer data gatherers in every state to help us collect the data. And we're looking for funding for full-time programming staff right now to complete the information systems that we've designed so that we can begin to collect the 2004 election data from every state and test our system against that so that by 2006 we'll have a system in place to audit elections statistically. And in addition, U.S. Count Votes group of statisticians, we have just released last week a long study, a 27-page report on the national exit poll discrepancies, the discrepancies between the election results and the exit polls. And it's a very scientific report. It discusses the fact that this exit poll discrepancy could not have happened by chance. Everyone agrees on that. The best chance for it happening could have been 1 in 1,000 all the way up to 1 in 10 million, but it could not have happened by chance. And we read through the 77-page report and all the data released by the Edison-Matovsky pollsters, and we found absolutely no evidence for any problems with the exit polls themselves. So that leaves the election results to look at. And so our group is calling for an investigation of U.S. elections. And I just heard from Bernie this morning that our report has just made the front page of the Moscow Times. So, well, and we hope that fairly soon we'll also be covered in the United States in the mainstream media. Okay, and I have some business cards if anyone would like them. Thank you very much. And I'm really looking forward to the conference.
Hi, I'm Dave Griscom. I'm a physicist by trade, and I retired in 2001 from after 33 years at the Naval Research Laboratory in Washington, D.C. I had in my pocket invited professorships of research in Tokyo and Paris for a total of about 15 months, and my wife and I bounced around the world. Last spring, we ended up in Tucson, Arizona, where I got an adjunct professorship at the University of Arizona, but the state was too poor to pay me, which is just as well because I devoted 100% of my time to other things than research since then. I joined the Move On to Canvas for John Kerry, and I met in Tucson a gentleman by the name of John Brakey, who was a very political activist. Myself, I have been politically non-activist until essentially the last year. John is a precinct cluster captain, or was at that time, for four precincts, Democratic cluster captain in Tucson, in the southwestern, predominantly Hispanic 7th district. And on election day, well, okay, John and I met at a Move On organizational meeting, and so I sort of stayed in contact with him every time. He was kind of magnetic to me. And it turned out that when he went to pull take his tear sheets, as he was entitled to, in other words, carbon copies of the consecutive number register, he was met with hostility in three of his four precincts, and he really felt physically menaced in a couple of these things. These people were not cooperating. Even the guys, the one person who identified himself as a Democrat, even wouldn't give it his last name. They refused. They told him to get out. And John has a record. I mean, here's a guy. He was a junior high dropout because of ADD, learning disabilities, and dyslexia, who has since accomplished many things. He started an environmental organization in Mexico and butted heads with crooked Mexican politicians. John claims, and I accept because he's an intrinsically honest person, he was the one that saddled the PRI in Mexico with the term dinosaurs. He pushed it and he pushed it, and he's pushing other names for people that are cheating on voting here now in the U.S. Well, anyway, so John was an activist at heart, and immediately decided that he would audit the election in one of his precincts. In fact, his home precinct, which seemed to have been pretty thoroughly stolen, was his intuition from simply eyewitness interviews that he'd already done. But he went and he got all of the county records, which he manually, as I understood, he didn't get them digitally. He manually put 2,000 voter records in Excel spreadsheets with all of the demographic data that he had there, and then he manually entered all of the records of who signed which rosters and who was put on the consecutive number register and what the poll workers annotated as regards to what were provisional ballots and what were regular ballots. And then he and I pored over these data. He put in about, he estimates, 1,300 hours. I think that I'm approaching maybe 300 hours myself. Initially, as a scientist, physicist, I look for systems, how things work, to try to form a hypothesis. What does this mean? What is there seems to be something going on here, but every time we think we see something, it looked like chaos. And finally, pretty recently, within the last maybe 3 weeks, I finally did a balance sheet with all of these numbers and balanced every possible term, numerical count of voters, ballots, spoiled ballots, signatures on this roster, signatures on that roster. And then I compared my balance to the official ballot report and certificate of performance by the poll workers at this precinct. They did not agree, but I could force it to agree by assuming that they fed 38 provisional ballots into the ballot box by the end of voting day, and that also that they were 12 double votes and that they covered illegally 11 of them by creating their own spoils. And I'll, in my talk this afternoon, I will tell how that was done. So we have about 100 counts of voter fraud, and Pima County Attorney has been made aware of this, and she's considering the complaint as we speak. We don't know what she's going to do. This is highly charged. The radical right wing has taken over Arizona politics rather firmly for over a decade, to the point where I understand that John McCain will not employ Republicans as aides for fear that they are some of these radical right-wing, and I hate to use the word Christian because they don't behave as Christians, but in fact they think they call themselves Christians. I think that that's enough for now. Come hear my talk and we'll get the rest of the story.
Hi, my name is Brad Friedman. My website is bradblog.com. I'm a blogger, an investigative blogger. I'm actually called here to speak about two different things this weekend. One is the work that I've been doing at bradblog.com, some of the reports that I've put out since November 2nd on the election and things that have gone on, including a whistleblower down in Florida by the name of Clint Curtis, who claims to have been asked by U.S. Representative Tom Feeney to create vote rigging software. He, fortunately, I believe, will be here this weekend, so I don't have to speak about that too much. I have been asked, however, to speak about the media and the response from the media after November 2nd. I'll save all my choice words for the mainstream media for that event. I hope you guys will be there. The other issue that I'm here to talk about is the VelvetRevolution.us, which is an umbrella group that I've helped to form, which comprises over 100 election reform and voting rights groups, something that I tried to bring together after November 2nd, and we had all of these disparate groups doing all of this terrific work that you're hearing about now, and to try to bring them together, to give them some strength as an umbrella organization, we've launched a campaign called the Divestiture for Democracy, which takes on the American voting machine companies, asking them to do the right thing for this country. It's about time. Laura spoke about the fact that this process is entirely privatized. That is true. However, it is done completely with public funds. So we contend that these companies, which are doing the work of the government, need to behave as a government should behave, which is to be transparent and run a verifiable, auditable election system in the world's most important democracy. That said, those are the two things I was scheduled to speak about. Unfortunately, over the past week, I've discovered something very troubling that I've been reporting on Brad Blog that I think some of you guys probably know about. And as is the case, unfortunately, with so many folks on the left, I think they've lost the battle. They've lost the war before they even realized there was a battle. To that end, this conference is meant to speak about what went on in 2004. I got news for you. The fix is in for 2006 and for 2008. And what I've discovered over the past week, and as I'm not speaking about this at any of the conferences so far, unless we can find something, is a group that has come out of nowhere, Talon News-like, on March 17th by the name of the American Center for Voting Rights. On March 21, just 3 days later, they were testifying before a U.S. congressional committee on the election irregularities that occurred in Ohio, an investigation that was going on, looking into exactly what went on in Ohio. Well, it turns out this nonpartisan, tax-exempt 501c3 group is not quite as nonpartisan as they made themselves out to be at this hearing, where they were the only voting rights group to talk. It turns out that this group is comprised of, well, the two people that we know of right now. One is Mark F. Thor Hearn. You can look him up. He is the National General Counsel for Bush Cheney 04 Inc. Their nonpartisan spokesperson is a fellow by the name of Jim Dyke. who is the communications director for a little group called the Republican National Committee. This system and the testimony they were giving has nothing to do with what went wrong in Ohio in 2004. And more disturbing, by the way, they did not identify themselves in their testimony as having anything to do with Bush Cheney or the RNC. They claim to be nonpartisan, longtime voting rights advocates. And anybody who is paying attention realizes this is the 40th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act, and the people who were killed in Selma, Alabama, fighting for real voting rights in this country. And for these guys to come out and call themselves voting rights advocates is an unbelievable insult to so many people who have given their lives and frankly are still giving their lives and putting their lives on the line every day overseas fighting for what is supposed to be democracy around the world. I'm very troubled by this. Now, that said, 3 days later, after we discovered this group even existed, an announcement came out that there would be a new blue ribbon panel convened to look into the 2004 election and to recommend how to improve it and to improve the process for inclusion in the coming years. This commission, it was a blue ribbon bipartisan commission to be co-chaired by Jimmy Carter, former President Carter, and ironically enough, James A. Baker would be the co-chair on the Republican side, the man who was responsible for ensuring that votes were not counted in 2000 is now chairing a commission to tell us how we should improve inclusion in the electoral process in America. This commission was announced on Thursday, March 24th at 2 p.m. over the U.S. Newswire in a press release. 24 minutes later, the ACVR had their press release out lauding this commission. Nobody else knew about it. I work with over 100 voting rights, real voting rights and election reform groups via velvetrevolution.us. None of us had ever heard of this commission. None of us were invited to participate in this commission. It was formed in secret. We have no idea who's paying for it, but the ACVR knew about it, and their friend Jim Baker is sitting atop this commission, as well as at least three or four folks who are very well connected to James Baker and his law firm, Baker Botts, and I can connect a few more dots for you later. If you'd like to talk to me about it afterwards, I'm happy to talk to you about it. It's so fresh that we're actually printing up some press releases on this in the back. This is a very troubling issue. This is looking ahead. Jim Baker must step down off this committee. We must get his compadres off this committee if we're going to use this committee as a real election reform committee to make the real needed changes. Jimmy Carter and Jerry Ford led a commission in 2000 that brought us to the Help America Vote Act. The people in Congress pay attention to these commissions. Now, there's all kinds of problems with the HAVA Act, but out of that commission came the HAVA Act and came the legislation. Now, there's going to be legislation that is going to come out of this as well. And I can tell you, the fix is in. And we need to do something about this. We need to get the word out. I hope you guys in the media will help us get the word out a little bit better, frankly, than you've helped us get the word out since November of what has happened and what these folks are talking about. Because this thing is only getting worse. And I can prove it. I have the hard evidence. I don't report rumors on my blog, but actual confirmable facts. So I'll be happy to talk to you guys about that since we don't have time to talk over the weekend about it, although I'll try to shoehorn it in anyway. Thank you guys very much.